Welcome to ShollyCast, the podcast all about Lolly and Shota, including Not Safe for Work. ShollyCast is hosted by me, Hydro, and Dr. X. We're the developers of Insexual Awakening, a straight Shota visual novel game with incest, lollies, MILFs, onesans, and even a femboy character if you play Insexual Awakening 2, our sequel. If you'd like to play our games, you can download them at our official Barag at barag.net/cyberhex. And if you'd like to support Insexual Awakening's continued development and this podcast, you can join our Subscribestar at subscribestar.adult/cyberhex. Enjoy the show. Welcome back to ShollyCast, everybody. Once again, you're joined by Hydro, that's me, along with Dr. X, my co-host. And for this episode, we are joined by Muniverse. Welcome, Mew.
Happy to be here.
Welcome.
Yeah, we're excited to have you. So tell us a little bit about what kind of work you do and what you're primarily working on.
Well, I am primarily a comic artist. That's like my passion right there. I was doing a comic. It's an ongoing comic called Magnum Opus with my original characters. I do exclusively original character art. On the side from there, I just do little coding projects and try to mix the two.
So like from a quick look on your profile on Barag, it seems like you mostly do like Yaoi Shota stuff. Is that right?
Yeah, I do. I was doing, before I got onto Barag, I was strictly doing adult stuff. You know, I was, you know, trying to keep it under the radar. I given up Shota a while ago, but, you know, I realized, let me go back to my roots. Signed up to Barag, and I haven't left the place. I can't leave. I'm not leaving.
Same. It's hard to leave once you're there because it's such an awesome place.
I love it.
So how long have you been doing like Yaoi Shota art?
I've been drawing Yaoi since I was 19 years old, and I'm 38 now, so it's been a very long time.
Dang, you're like one of the OGs.
One of the OGs.
Yeah, damn, that's impressive. And how long has your comic series been going on, Magnum Opus?
I started it in 2019. It didn't pick up any traction until 2020, but I had to put it to the side because I realized that there was an issue going on with Patreon, and I figured I needed a place to like really show my work without having to censor anything, because it was becoming an issue. I was doing adult art and they were censoring me anyway.
Really?
Yes.
Was it like because of the fetishes or something else?
It's possible that it was over the fetishes because, you know, I'm hardcore into daddy kink, and I guess, you know, I guess they were making a stink about things like non-con and if your characters weren't consenting and things like that. I realized I'd had it with using the platform when I logged in one day and I couldn't like type out the word cum. Like I was able to type that out.
Yep.
For years. Yep. And then suddenly one day I log in and they're like, oh, you can't type in the word cum anymore. I'm like, look, I am a grown ass man.
Yeah, seriously.
This is ridiculous.
I mean, the last straw for us was when they said like, oh, well, I mean, we were kind of done with with Patreon a while ago. But I think like the final nail in the coffin for us was, and they're just kind of like, well, no, we got to make sure that you're actually an adult. So send us a picture of your profile and your information. And then we'll know that you're allowed to. But I'm just like, no, or we're not giving you any like personal information of like what we look like and stuff, which totally isn't going to get hacked or compromised down the road. And it's all a very similar story that we've heard from many people regarding that platform.
Yeah, we used to have our straight Shota game and Sexual Awakening on Patreon, and of course they eventually didn't like that very much, and we were making a decent amount of income from it, but we had to remove it from our Patreon, and man, the income really shot down like hugely.
Yeah, it did.
I hate to hear that. I just, there's so many of my friends who got axed off of Patreon for various reasons, you know, and it wasn't even just Patreon, you know, it's the atmosphere in the fandom lately. People, they're going after your livelihood nowadays. They don't care.
Yeah, it's not right.
It's not. It's scary out here, guys.
Yeah, and I mean, that's the reason why we moved over to a Subscribestar. And, you know, there was also Fanbox, and, you know, but even Subscribestar is now having, you know, some issues that we've seen that's affecting, you know, that's affecting us and affecting other creators, which has to do with some weird card processing error code that seems to happen, but it doesn't happen for everybody. But, you know, for those who do, that's another, like, strange barrier, and, you know, they're not responding to people like that. That the probably Substar's biggest flaw, if there was to be one, it's their lack of communication. They basically don't respond to anything anymore, which is too bad, because, you know, they had built up a bit of a reputation that they were okay with pretty much everything as long as you followed a certain procedure. And, you know, luckily there is Fanbox, but Fanbox, you know, it's based in Japan, so, like you're talking about, even though you could create whatever you wanted, you still have to follow Japanese law, which requires you to censor the genitals, which, you know, that, you know, Dr. X and I have our own strong opinions about that, too.
But you, Universe, you have your own website now. So we wanted to ask, like, how are you managing subscriptions and stuff? Like, how are you setting up your stuff?
So essentially, I use Stripe. You know, and I know people have their reservations about that, but I think if people have a concrete business plan and they're not plastering all of their porn on the main page and, like, having a way to censor it or block it out from, like, minors seeing it, I think they'd be okay with it. You know, those are all things I had to really test out, though. Like, I can't really say for sure that this is something everybody can do. But, you know, I tried to explain this to people who are curious about becoming site owners, that there's millions of ways to go about this. And it doesn't need to be the way I did it, but this is what's working for me. Mm-hmm. So I made the site, but I figured I need a payment processor and integrate it. So I had to start thinking about creating a portal, all this stuff. This is all stuff that, like, needs to be essential, like a business website. So, like, Stripe can say, okay, this is a legitimate thing. Are there chargebacks? No. Okay, cool. Then, you know, you can continue to use it, essentially. Now, what gave me the idea that I could do this? It all stems back to Patreon. You know, I got to thank Patreon. Shout out to Patreon. for fucking my life up so much that I had to start thinking about outside of the box to stop using them. I noticed Patreon uses Stripe, right? Mm-hmm. So I was like, blue skidoo, we can too. That's what I did, you know?
Yeah.
So, you know, I realized since they can host not safe for work artists on their platform while using Stripe, whatever deal they have with Stripe, they're going to have that deal with me, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So I figured getting an account for Stripe is fine, having a website is fine, but integrating it was just a whole other thing, you know? And so I had to really dig deep and, like, put on my software engineering hat and, like, think about what kind of functionality I could put to the portal, how easy the process would be for users to sign up to the site. I thought about the user experience that I was having on Patreon, and it sucked ass, you know?
Yeah.
They kept adding features nobody wanted, and while ignoring the stuff that we asked for, you know?
Yeah.
And so when I was making my site, I was thinking about how easy is it for somebody to sign up to it, have no issues. So I made the site as simple as possible. There's no DM feature. People got to email me. And I think that gives a bit more of a personalized experience for my patrons, because before with Patreon, I couldn't really control anything. People come in and I could greet them, but I think it's just much more personal when people, you know, they reach out to me. They're like, hey, I saw your website and I want to sign up to this tier you're asking for. And it's all been streamlined in a way where I don't have to think twice about it. That's what I wanted. I wanted to make a site and then not have to like deal with it much, you know, because I'm not trying to change up and put add new bells and whistles and features and stuff. Like, there's no ads to add inside of the website. I don't have to do any of that stuff. And so far, the people who've used my site, they've said it's easy to use and it's not hard to navigate around. So I'm really proud of how I designed it. And I think all these things are just important to make something look legitimate. And I'm glad that I could give this to the people who support me directly. So it's been fun doing that.
So you basically put your nose to the grindstone to really get that initial hard work done to make sure that the overall user experience was very streamlined and very like usable.
Absolutely. You know, I think like, you know, I've been patrons to other people and supported them over the years. And it was like, you know, it was so important to see even us having this ability to get support from our supporters, because 10 years ago, we didn't have this stuff, you know?
Nope.
Absolutely not. So it was like you were in the dark.
Highly limited.
It was. And even if you wanted to do something not safe for work, like there wasn't support there for that. You know, so I don't know. There's people who I did meet way back when they did have their own websites and they were like early pioneers in the space. And they basically had to like get private processors to like process this stuff for them. You know, there wasn't anything out there that you could just attach to a website and call it a day. So you really had to like build the website from scratch and then have somebody like engineer something to like get people to process their cards. It was such a weird space that where artists couldn't monetize anything, you know, and I had to live through all that.
Yeah. Well, all of us had to go through that. Yeah.
Even though there's like problems now with, of course, like certain kinds of content in the past, the only thing you could do was have your own website because there's no one else was going to help you basically.
Absolutely. And a lot of like the Shota and Lolicon artists that I came across that had their own websites back then. This is how you were coming across it, really. Like, you know, there was 4chan, but, you know, at this time, people were migrating out of it because of like how many Nazis were on the site. So,
yeah,
you know, that's really where I got my beginnings was on 4chan, honestly, like back in the early 2000s when I was a small wee boy, you know.
Yep.
So did you ever like post Yaoi Shota there on 4chan?
I posted, because at this time, surprisingly, I was a Lolicon, actually.
Oh, wow.
I was very into it, and I just really liked how cute the characters were, and you know, it wasn't really sexual at first. It was more like, wow, I really like cute things.
Yeah. You know?
Look how cute the girls are. And then, you know, that devolved pretty fast, but you know, I think what really broke me into the Shota arena was I had a friend, he really loved Bridget from Guilty Gear.
Everyone is gay for Bridget.
Yeah. Everybody. It was a quintessential thing to just be gay for Bridget. In the early 2000s, it was okay. Every straight gay didn't matter. They were all down for Bridget. I was one of them. So I mean, Tim, as far as like, because now things are different now, you know, because I guess she's more of a trans girl now. So back then we really didn't have that, you know. So it was like traps or nothing, you know. There were so many things about the early 2000s. I'm sad that like the generation coming up will never experience, because we were eating good back then, man. We really were.
I remember there was a, what was it called? Y Gallery.
Y Gallery was so lit. I loved that place. It was really great. This is really where I was posting my Shota stuff at that point. Hmm. And then the site died, so we stopped doing that. I think I just had it with like sites disappearing and getting banned and not having the space to be able to toss these drawings out there. So I just stopped doing it.
So Bridget was kind of the gateway, but from there, where did you go to? What was the next Shota character that you gravitated towards?
I at this time, I was really into Loveless. What else was I? It was a long time ago, you know. I'm trying to like go through all the many characters that I enjoyed. But I think I really had a attachment to, I mean, Hunter x Hunter was out at this time. Not the new one, but the old one. So I was like, Gon is cool. I like Gon. And I was really into Yu Yu Hakusho as well. So the protagonists, they were teenagers, but not really like younger than that.
Mm-hmm.
But getting into younger stuff, I think it's more other people's characters, like people online whose stuff I've seen. It's not more a show, you know? I know people like their cartoons and stuff, but I don't really watch cartoons anymore.
I can see how, like you said, that you mostly what you create are OCs, like your own characters, right? So it would make sense that you got influenced by creators who had their own characters as well. Would you say that played a factor?
Absolutely, because I was reading a lot of people's work, like doujins and stuff like that, and it was like purely stuff that people were just making up. You know, it wasn't like a show you could pinpoint to that had those characters. So it was more like ingesting Shota and Lolly through people who are just making it themselves.
Well, so when you started to get into Shota like more seriously, were you already into like the daddy kink, or like with like dads with Shotas, or did that come later?
When I introduced my OCs that people know me really for, my character Sam and his boyfriend Luke, these two are people were putting me on the map for. Sam, he's this really burly masculine man, he's hairy and everything like that, so mm-hmm. You know, the gays were loving that, you know, so I was enjoying drawing that, because you know, at this time period when I came back on the internet during the pandemic, I was already in the I'd graduated from school and I'd already been classically trained, and you know, I was used to drawing adult male bodies, so this is what I was really drawing most of the time. But I realized I really do miss Shota a lot. Like, I just, the more I kept drawing, the more I realized, you know, I don't feel good about how I can draw this particular thing, and then I can't enjoy the other side of daddy kink, which I really want to explore again. And, you know, it was like a gateway for me to draw Sam and Luke, and then it was feeding me with the daddy kink there. But I was like, no, I what I really want to draw is like, man, on boy stuff. Like, I don't want to just keep drawing adult stuff only. I want a safe space where I can draw both,
right? And like, when you do like manic boy stuff, it kind of like it accentuates the daddy thing because of the age gap.
I really love it. And it's like, I know people were like, well, you know, we haven't seen you drawing Shota. Yes, because I had to work on like drawing men, because I wasn't good at that. So I took a detour to stop drawing Shotas to draw men, and then I got lost in the weeds there for a bit, because I like drawing that, but you know, muscle's great, but it's like I love the soft and the small, you know, I love them too,
that appealing contrast.
I do appreciate that people love, they tell me this all the time, and they're like, oh, I love the contrast, I love how, you know, your smallest character, he's hairless, and this one, he's so big and he's hairy. You know, I'm like, yes, yes, you guys see the vision. Yes. Yes.
You know, it makes me think that, like, imagine how popular, like, a classical, like, training art course would be if they offered both of those aspects. I would imagine that you'd actually get a ton of people signing up for that.
Oh, yeah.
Because if you said to artists, hey, you know, we're gonna train you to not only draw like, you know, adult male and female bodies, but we're also gonna teach you how to draw small bodies, and you know, I think people go, and they would go crazy for that, because then they'd be like, oh man, now I'm not gonna get, you know, stuck on, because I think that's what happens, is like you said, when you focus on one particular body type for a while, sometimes it ends up occurring is you get pigeonholed, man. You kind of either by yourself or by others, where they're just kind of like, oh, you got to keep drawing that, and then you kind of lose sight of the other stuff you might enjoy. Whereas if you get something where you're drawing each of the variety, that now you're like challenging. Well, it's also too for artists. I think artists do like to challenge themselves with that stuff. I'm sure for you, it's probably very satisfying to be like, yes, I can draw nice, you know, sexy burly men, and then I can draw, you know, cute supple Shota, because that's like such a big contrast, and I got to challenge my brain and my you know, my hands to be able to draw that way, right?
It's so much fun. I hate being limited. I just hate it. You know, I loved drawing my adult characters. You know, I always drew them. They always be a part of what I'm doing here. But it's just like, it just didn't seem right to, I have to stick to one thing only forever. It was ridiculous. I couldn't do it. I always wanted to do Shota, but because of how, you know, politically charged it is in the space, like how people feel about it, how they have their hangups about it. I don't want to be involved with anybody's feelings about what I'm doing. I just want to create, you know, and I should have the right to do that.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes.
Yeah, you should. Yes. I think all artists should be able to, not just, you know, Lolly and Shota creators, but obviously we know Lolly and Shota creators face like a lot of stigmas, but so do other, you know, artists, like, you know, yeah. Bestiality artists, that they get a lot of flack too,
for sure.
Incest,
yeah. Yes.
Non-con,
yep. Right. So you should be able to freely create things that are fictional and are your own. Yeah, and that's why it's great to hear that you created your own website. I mean, it's kind of funny how it's basically like gone full circle. It's basically like, that's how it used to be, like, you know, before Patreon and Subscribestar and Fanbox existed. So then everybody kind of migrated and tried out Patreon. So then Patreon restricted everybody. And then everybody was just like, oh man, remember back when you could have your own website? And now it's kind of cycled back to that.
You know, it's just, it's poetic, honestly, because I used to be a webmaster. I used to own my own websites. That's how I was doing it. And then I guess we all got convinced that social media was like the cure-all answer for our problems. And look where we're at. You know, it took me a decade to really see the ramifications of what was going on. But just to see how every community that I've ever invested my time in is no longer here, or some company bought it out and then gutted it, or whatever other reasons that they couldn't allow us to congregate as a community, you know. And it was, it's just like seeing this for 15 years straight, it was like the writing's on the wall and I can't ignore it anymore. You know, I have to make this decision now, or I'm going to be stuck out on Schitt's Creek without a paddle, like a lot of these artists that I'm seeing right now. You know, it was seeing people lose their Patreon accounts because antis didn't like what they were doing, or their Subscribestar, whatever, Fanbox, whatever. They get cut off from it immediately. Nobody is looking into whether the allegations are true or not. They just cut you off. And that right there, just, it scared the shit out of me. You know, I was like, if I'm going to go down, I might as well go down on my own ship. You know,
right. Yeah.
I get it that artists, they're not software engineers. They're not building websites. But when I was coming on the internet, you had to know how to use a website, make it, all that stuff. People had to make their own. That's how you found people. So it's like, it's not something that's, you know, I know people look at me and they think I'm doing witchcraft and wizardry, but it's not just witchcraft.
Not just witchcraft.
It's witchcraft, yes, but it's not just witchcraft. You know, I really did, you know, growing up, I had to know how to navigate the internet and, you know, I used to make websites in my free time for no reason, just to post my fan fiction on it. You know, I would, and then share it with friends. That was what I was doing back in the day, making my own website so I can post my own Yahweh on it. The TOS for other things were just like, no, you can't post that there. So I was like, okay, fine, I'll make my own website. And I honestly should have stuck with that. But, you know, I wanted to explore and see what options were out there. And at the time, social media was helping a bit to help connect us with other people we may not have realized was there. But I think now with how the algo is and how predatory it is and how they're not even showing you things you like anymore, I've completely given up on that strategy completely. And I try to tell people that same, they should try to do something different because things are changing on the internet. And I'm just aware of how this is affecting the art space, and I'm just moving accordingly.
That makes sense. One of the things that people can do to kind of change along with how things are changing is please don't only have a Twitter account. Please don't only have a Twitter account. You know, like sign up on Bareg, okay?
Yeah, I mean, I was on Twitter since 2009. So it's just watching how the site has changed in the last 3 years alone was very concerning. I mean, as soon as I saw Elon bought it, I was like, you know what? It's going to shit anyway. Let's see how it goes.
And was that around the time you got in Bareg?
Yes, because I was tired of what was going on Twitter. I left all my 30,000 followers behind for Bareg.
I mean, that's obviously a big leap to make. And, you know, I know it's very, very hard for people, but that's the reason why, like Dr. X said, you really do not want to put all your eggs in one basket when it comes to social media, especially because, you know, like, for example, Blue Sky for a while was like a lot of people. Well, Lolly Shota creators, some of them were seeing it as kind of like, oh, man, that's going to be the great alternative to Twitter. and it's going to be amazing. And then like almost right away, even previous guests we've had on the podcast, they created a Blue Sky account, they posted some show on Lolly, and bam, they were instantly banned. So it's like there was actually no difference. That it's literally owned by the Jack Dorsey, the guy who owned Twitter.
Yeah, so like there was like the first wave of like Lolly and Shota banning happened under Jack Dorsey. So I mean, it's the same guy.
Yeah. So
I mean, I can honestly see how this. Yeah, I saw Blue Sky and I thought, you know what, this will be great to get away from all the garbage I'm seeing on Twitter. At least, you know, at least I'll be around sensible minded people. That was really what I transferred over to Blue Sky for. And I was honestly tired of seeing drama and antis having hot shit takes, and none of that was happening on Blue Sky. So I just went over there for peace of mind, really. But I knew eventually, you know, the people yapping about Lolly Show were going to start making rules and regulations about what's appropriate to post on there, even though gay men can show their entire butt cheeks on the site. They can show you all their taint, right? Deep in their taint. But you can't post a little bit of Lolly Show. That's crazy.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
That's right.
And it's weird, too, because Blue Sky's whole philosophy is like, oh, you can create your own, like, little spaces that you create your own rules for. Except for Lolly Show, though. That's disgusting.
That's just disgusting. You know?
Yeah, post your taint and set, please.
Yes, you can make taint-averse. We'll be fine with that. But not a Shota's taint, no.
And you know what's crazy? People can... what gets me is people who like will post or do like daddy kink things or post incest. All of that's acceptable, but the moment it's Lolly Show, banned.
Yeah.
That's insane. It's incest, it's great. It's adult. But if it's anything else, it's like, no. That, I don't know, the lines, the mental gymnastics, I can't.
Yeah, I mean that's the reason why, like you said, creating your own website is great, because you avoid all of that. It's you literally are the ruler of all that's what's permitted, what's not, and you create your own rules, essentially. And I think that's pretty important, but I do think it's great that for people who may not have the ability to create a website right away, at least you have spaces like Athe, like Bareg. I mean, those are huge sanctuaries for people. ATF. That's why, like, ATF, yep, All the Fallen. Those are all very safe places for everybody. And that's the reason why, like, when Athey almost got shut down or was going to shut down, there was a lot of people that came out in support of trying to keep the site up, and they did. And that was a big deal because, you know, it's like you said, usually it's kind of like they kind of bucked the trend in a way that they basically were just like, you know what, we're going to keep it going because it's an important place for people and we don't want to get rid of it. And I mean, I'm sure you know this very well too, you know, a big reason why a lot of these sites end up going down is not because, you know, that the people get bored of it or whatever, but it's more that the cost is astronomical.
Yeah.
And you know, when you have a site that gets popular and it's, you know, everybody loves it, but you can't make any revenue stream except for what you're literally taking out of your paycheck or your pocket, that gets rough after a while. Yeah.
And that's why it's really important that, like, if you know, if you enjoy a site, if you enjoy a creator and you have the means to support them, just consider supporting them, because they don't have as many options to monetize and get support compared to, you know, like someone who like draws like 6-year-olds fucking instead or something like that all the time.
Absolutely. And I came from communities that were supported by people's dollars. Like, there was a few communities that I came from. Notably, there was one, and I still frequent this board, Aaron Fantasy. It's an OG forum. I am a contributor there. I've been on a contributor there since 2008, I think. Mm-hmm. So it's you know, people think the internet is 5 websites, dude, and it's not. They think it's TikTok, YouTube, Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram, dude. And it's like, no, dude, that is not the internet. I know people who are born after 2005 can't believe that there are websites that are not YouTube, but and it's like it's like Google is right there and you could just type it in, and it's like they forget all of that's there. And it's the saddest thing, because forums, they still exist and they still matter, and I will go on that forum on any given day just to read somebody's, you know, crack ship fan fiction, because, you know, it's just chef's kiss, you know. It's like, yeah, you can't like, people are still distributing scanlation projects to stuff, and it blows my mind that people don't even know what scanlation is anymore. But, you know, back in my day, you know, I had to go on MIRC. It was like this P2P chat like thing. You could go on there and essentially you can get any files you want from anybody's computers who are hosting it. And this is essentially how I was like finding doujins and Japanese music and other stuff like that. Like, and like reading up on like, this is where I was getting all the lolly stuff, really. Cause there was no real way to get this stuff, really. Like the R34 boards weren't prevalent yet, you know, outside of 4chan or whatever. But if you wanted like stuff from different artists that were at Comic Con, for example, and they were making doujins and things like that, you couldn't like buy it from them. You'd either have to go all the way to Japan to get their merchandise or their comics or whatever, or somebody you knew went and got it for you, and then, or somebody was living there and they were just what do you call it, like scanning them into printers. Yeah. And then literally sharing it with people. They clean it up as best as they could, you know, try to make it look as legible as possible, translate it, and then they put it up on websites that they owned for their scanlation projects. And it was like, it was just the only way lolicons and shotokans were getting anything.
Yeah, that's right.
You know, so P2P sharing was so important. And you know, and then things progressed and we had boards and forums where we could share the stuff more frequently. And then I was honestly surprised that Lolly Show got more popular than it did. I'm not surprised by the backlash though, because we were supposed to be underground, really. It was like furries. You weren't supposed to know about this stuff.
Well, we, you know, Dr. X and I frequently talk about how the furry fandom and the community really kind of, they overcame the stigma But like that, they were able to, like, that's probably one of the biggest success stories I've seen of like a community that
true
for a long, long time was made fun of, for a long, long time was, you know, basically like shunned and pushed out. But then eventually the furry fandom was just kind of like, you know what, fuck it, we're just gonna make our own dedicated sites because there's a lot of us around. And they did, and they basically they overcame it. And you know, now it's like it's not even it like if you try to make fun of it, like if anybody makes fun of furries or whatever, and people just they don't really care anymore. And yeah, I mean, ever since, you know, My Little Pony and it came out and people were talking about wanting to fuck all the ponies and stuff, which is pretty based, by the way. but it's like once that happened, they really just completely solidified themselves.
Once it was okay to say like you would fuck Charizard or Eevee or whatever, or Mew, it was yeah, all over. It's all over. No one cares anymore.
I think it's honestly cool that I mean, first of all, we shouldn't be messing with furries because number one, they own the internet. Okay, these people can run servers. Okay, they have a whole IT systems. Let's not mess with the furries. You know, you don't want to disappear off the internet real quick. Like, we don't want to disturb the furry gods. But Lolly shows this is I would love to see that kind of camaraderie in our community. But then there's like this schism between Lolicons and Shotokans, you know, it's noticeable, you know, and it we don't protect each other and it's not good.
Yeah. And we definitely should do better and, you know, help each other out. You know, our exact tastes in characters doesn't really matter at all, honestly. And plus, there's a lot of overlap. I mean,
lots of overlap.
Yeah. I mean, I like Lolly, I like Shota. So yeah, so where does that leave me? I have to help both of my homies.
Right. You know, you play both sides so you come on top, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, I do see that. I mean, there's just more Lolicons. That's just what it is, you know? Mm. Just like there's so many heterosexual people out there. I gather it's kind of like that, where it's just like, you know, it's just they're the more dominant group, you know? Shotokans, you know, I hear people complaining. They're like, oh, you know, well, it's not enough of this. And I'm like, well, I mean, you could support people so there's more of it.
Yep, that's right.
This was another reason why I wanted to hop back in, because I was so tired of having to shield myself and be in an environment where I have to constantly police my actions around people. It was like this on Twitter. As much as I like my Twitter art friends, some of them were judgmental. Some of them were antis, and I didn't know that until having a conversation with somebody else or how they reacted in somebody else's Twitter thread or something like that. And so I did a lot of blocking the last 2 years. And that's the most I've ever blocked people. Mm-hmm. That's how bad it was getting. So it's at this point, I realize I don't want to be in a space where I'm coming across people like this constantly. And it, you know, it's like people don't even have sense anymore. So I don't even want to be in the same league or crowd with people who have zero comprehension about kinks and fetishes and stuff like that. I don't have to sit here and you know, do this mental gymnastics stuff with people who honestly don't even want to understand it. So let me just be around people who do. And you know, Barag has been one of those places that have been so important for me, because I'm untethered. I'm no longer using any of the other social media websites. I don't post there often. I don't post on Twitter. My account is locked, but I told them, everybody on there, I was like, look, I'm getting out of here. See you guys in the next life. I got a site to build. I got people to feed, you know, and they're hungry.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Like, and I got to feed them. So I got to go. And I can't worry about how people are going to feel about characters being underage. I don't care if they're not over 18. I just don't care. You know, I don't give a shit. Let that be known. I don't give a fuck. All right. Mm-hmm. So
good.
Yeah, you can't put it against me. I don't care.
And I mean, that's why I applaud you for doing that, because, you know, that's very hard for some, for a lot of people, a lot of creators to do that, because it's kind of like you get stuck in the situation where you realize your social media has kind of built up your brand or your, you know, your noticeability and your viewership, but you have to take the, negative with the positives that you get with it. And that's, you know, to hard for people to break away from that. It's a lot of times it's the convenience factor, right? Like people want, well, it goes back to like what you said, how there are some people who think there's only like 5 websites of the whole internet. It's because of the convenience factor. I mean, people want to just click, go on Twitter or wherever and just look at their subscriptions, look at who they're following and be like, oh sweet, I just saw this new art by this person and art by this person, which the aspect of that aspect is great. And that's the reason why it's good places like Athe and Barog exist, where they essentially took that formula, like the Mastodon platform took that formula of social media where you can follow people and see all their stuff, but they made it so that you can have places like Barog and Athe where you can post whatever you want, and primarily being Wally Shota. So, you know, having your own website is kind of like you're creating your own social media platform. That's essentially what you're doing.
Exactly.
for the younger people out there listening, that's essentially what you're doing.
Also, I think it's really important that for your mental health, that you're not like only hanging out in places that are like hostile to you.
Oh, yeah. Right. Big time.
You know, the amount of times I've heard friends go, oh, I don't feel like drawing anything right now. I'm not in the mood. My timeline is messy. And I'm like, why don't you just log out? You know, I'll say things. I'm all about decompressing. I've been on the internet for a very long time. And, you know, I realized that all I have to do is not log into any of these sites and post in places that I enjoy, and I'll be a winner. You know, I always win. You know, it was never a net negative for me to leave these sites, because I never gave a fuck about numbers to begin with. It's about the craft. And I think people understand that when they come on my page, they're like, oh, this person, like he's not fucking around. That's right. I'm not, because I'm not looking at other people's profiles all day long and doom scrolling and psyching myself out of good opportunities and telling myself I'm not good enough because other artists are posting 24/7 or people are using AI. I don't give a shit. I've been in my room drawing this shit 14 hours a day if I needed to when I was much younger. Like I really did the work, and that's why I get to enjoy the fruits of my labor now. It's not because of social media. It's like people found me and I just posted shit. That's it. Like, I didn't expect the number to be so fucking high. I really didn't, but I'm glad that people are resonating now. But I felt so lost on Twitter. I did not like being there. People were fake as fuck. People were arguing about absolutely nothing. The weirdest takes on Kinks. Like, all of a sudden people were kink shaming for this reason, for that reason. I'm like, you know what? Fuck all this. Because if I go on a fetish oriented website, I'm not going to hear this stupid shit.
Yeah, that's, you know? Right. You don't have people arguing about stupid shit on Barog, really. You don't really see that very often.
It's a breath of fresh air. It's for me, people like me, where it's like visibility is great and all, but I don't want to be visible in front of the wrong people. And I was very careful about this, because this is what leads to people getting canceled and all this nonsense that was happening on Twitter. And there's no line to be like, here's where the Shotokans hang out here, and this is where everybody else hangs out. Now normies are finding my shit and they're complaining like, oh, like, are you new here? And like, it's not like that at Barog, thankfully, because, you know, even if there's a few, you know, chuckleheads who, you know, make a stink about kinks they don't like, that they could easily filter.
Yeah,
you know, that's the one thing I love about the Fediverse. It's so open. If the protocol's open, you can literally interact with any of these instances. This is stuff you can't even do on Twitter. So I was more than happy to leave these walled gardens. Like Instagram and all that, they can suck my dick. They never wanted me on the platform anyway. Yeah. You know, like, this is why I try to tell Lolly Show artists who like run to Twitter. I'm like, what are you running there for? They're just gonna shoot you in the head and then bury your body in the backyard. Like, just be here, be where you're celebrated, enjoy being here. You know, it's, but hey, I can't say anything to people. I've seen how these sites are doing nothing for us. Some people will want to believe it does, but it really doesn't. Like, you can't even get people to see your posts on Twitter if you don't have a blue check, you know?
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah. So there's like extra layers of shadow banning. I mean, the biggest contrast that I can think of as an example, it was like when Orenji did that meme of Anatomy of a Gamer, because he posted that on both Barag and Twitter. Now on Barag, I mean, all you got were like the, you know, the crying emojis, and people loved it, and they were basically like gushing and obsessing over it, and it was great, it was hilarious. And on Twitter, it blew up, and you know, people liked it, but inevitably, you know, you get. But I mean, his account got banned for a while. Like how stupid is that shit?
But, yeah, just over.
You know, it was just like a meme. It was literally a meme, and because it like got popular enough, you had to be banned.
And you know, I saw that meme, and I thought to myself, that's funny. But I realized, wait a minute, this is Twitter, so he could post that.
Wait a minute.
And lo and behold, the guy gets banned. So yeah, that sucks. You know, it was just a joke, but people don't like Lolly Shows. That's just what it is.
They and I mean, like, thankfully, Orenji did get their page back.
Oh, okay.
They did get it back, but it's like, you know. The whole point of doing that, he had to delete the post, and it's like you do that's kind of the problem with, like you said, is you get canceled either by the platform itself, which is usually how it goes, and then you know it does the damage, like the damage is already done when that happens, because then you might think, then people are going to think that you're just permanently gone, or you know, they might leave. And so it's like all that hard work goes out the window. I mean, I can't imagine being some of the creators that have had their accounts banned on Twitter like 4 or 5 times and they keep coming back. But I mean, I understand Twitter is huge. Twitter has a ton of people, but man, you got to deal with the normies and they will drive you nuts. And I mean, the only like big positive out of Twitter for Orenji was that he got the Maiden Abyss creator to follow him and like his thing, and I mean, yeah. And that was great, but that's because the Maiden Abyss creator is a very unabashed, unashamed lolicon shotokan, so he doesn't give a shit about what.
I mean Twitter, it was crazy the time I was on there, because I mean, there was a time point when I was doing Devil May Cry fan art. I was so heavily deep into it. And the voice actor and stuntman of Dante followed me.
Wow. Nice. Very nice.
So he saw all of my Dante porn. And I think he called it a friend of mine, her artwork. Like, her and I, we were doing so much artwork. Like, it showed up in one of his, like, live Q&As. It was intensely embarrassing, and I mean, I can't pinpoint this video, it's somewhere on the internet, but him and the voice actor for Virgil were there, and they were talking about like all the gay porn but they found our incest porn, okay, and they were like, yeah, look at this is interesting, and we were freaking out watching this, a video of this on YouTube, and we're just like, ain't no way he saw that, and he did.
wouldn't it be great if you created like the Shota versions of
My god. Thank god I did not post any of my Shota there, because that would have been insane.
Well, no, that would have been great. That would have been amazing.
Oh no, like, you have to understand, this is Dante. He saw my porn. You know, it's so funny, because my friend, she had the she used to like draw these chibi versions of them, mm-hmm. of Dante and Virgil, and of them fucking, and he decided to put that up on a big screen for everybody to see, and it was like, look at that, like, that's dedication. I'm like, oh my god, kill us. Kill us now. And this is at a con he was at. Oh my god. That's the most famous we ever got. That
I mean, that's still pretty great, though, when that stuff happens. And it's like, I think, you know, Dr. X and I have talked about this before, too, that I think when it comes to the Shoten Loli community getting more traction, so to speak, and more acceptance, I think a big factor is getting not necessarily celebrities, like, quote unquote, but more like prominent creator. Oh, okay. Like, here's a good example. Like, let's say, like, Gargura, of course, she was immensely popular in Hololive, and she's obviously an unabashedly Loli VTuber.
Mm.
And what if she just, like, came out independently, like, as an independent creator, and was just kind of like, yeah, you know what? I fucking like lolicon porn, and I like Shotokan porn.
Please
go. You guys gotta support those creators, and you know, not be canceling people and stuff.
Like, please God, let that happen.
You're getting, when you get someone that prominent to do it, it's kind of like it pushes everything to the forefront, which can be scary, of course, but it's like that is a super important ally to have.
Yeah,
and it. The point is it gets people talking, it gets people discussing, and
so it would be nice if some bigger names had the balls to say what they really think and that they're okay with that kind of content.
Yeah, I mean, I know there was a lot of people when I switched over and just started doing Shota content exclusively. There was a lot of people who are super excited that I did that. They're like, "Oh my God, you're drawing Shota." I was like, "Yeah," and they're like, "Oh my God, you." This is like the best day ever. Like, who were into that? I was like, what? Well, yeah, but I just didn't think I was safe to do it. I didn't feel safe. That's why I didn't do it.
Mm-hmm.
Up until now. And it was now that I have the ability to do so. It's like wind in my sails every day. People are yelling at me about what's wrong about it. People are like, wow, this is great. Like, you got to keep on doing this. Like, if you stop, like, I'm going to starve. You know, it's like, yes.
and another great thing about, like, either not relying just on Twitter or just moving completely to Bragg or something is that it's a lot easier to make the right kind of friends, right? People who have the same kind of interest, who understand the content. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's like night and day. When I tell you, like, I enjoyed the time I had meeting other artists, people who I honestly looked up to were, like, giving me shout outs and following me back. And I thought that was interesting and wild, but I just wasn't happy. I wasn't happy just being able to do one thing. And I've always been able to do all this stuff, Incest, Dead Dove. But it was just like tiptoeing around on grenades, like if you were in like a field with like mines, you know. And it was like that every day, a minefield, and somebody stepped on one, and I'd see my friend step on one, and then there's like a whole call out thread for them, then it's crazy. I'm like, wait, where's all this coming from? Because there was a point in time where people were in Discords like plotting takedowns, and that was insane to even witness. To see people go to this length of to harm people and take things away from them. So at this point, I started thinking, you know what? I don't like social media anymore. I don't think I don't like being in these open places where they're not even willing to protect artists, not even from AI or anything like that. I got to get out of here. You know, I think it's sad that I can't see what my friends are up to, but I think at this point in time, I need to focus on me and my people, so that I can get the best quality things out to them and be in a place where I'm being appreciated instead of being like forced to like, hey, you can only draw this one thing. I don't feel comfortable with anything else. If it's not this, you're out of here. It's like, no, I think I'm just not going to bend over backwards for you assholes, and I'll just do my thing.
Yeah, exactly.
And you can enjoy your thing there and I'll enjoy my stuff here. You know, at least on my site, nobody's arguing with me, and people are free to comment. My site, you know, people are free to comment. There's a comment section under everything, so you can have conversations. I do enjoy people like interacting with me without like all the stimuli, you know, like ads everywhere, and there's tweets that they might get distracted by on the way to the drawing. You know what I mean? Like, It's nothing like that. People can de-stress, come on my site. They can look at stuff at their own leisure, at their own pace, and then log off. It's a simple experience, and it's just, you know, that's all I've always wanted for me, and what I wanted for my audience is that I can reach them easily. And these sites have done everything in their power to take that away from me.
So I'm glad you have your brag and you also have your website. That's great. And you have a pretty nice following of people, it looks like. People who really admire your work, and I'm sure you've made friends with other people on Brag as well.
Everybody's fun. And everybody's so talented and they're so funny. And, you know, no one's arguing about kinks. It's great. You know, people are very open about what they like, which is great to see too, because people on Twitter have to pull up a face about what they like so that
other
people...
Oh my God, I hate it.
So they don't get policed, yeah. You know, and they're thought policed, you know, into liking this one thing. And if they stand out of that line, it's suddenly like, oh, wow, you're the weird one. And, you know, it's like, yeah, no, everybody's weird on Barack. Everybody's having a good time. You like feet and sandals and cool, you know.
Yeah,
you like exactly. Hypercock. That's great. You know, you like sweat. That's cool. Nobody's mad about you about that. You enjoy that.
Well, in a way, it's kind of like how the internet used to be back when we were younger. I mean, I did not, when I was younger, you know, my teen years, I did not recall like any people complaining about Lolly Shota, like people liking Lolly or Shota. That was not a thing.
Not one bit.
People didn't like furry stuff at the time. They had a bigger problem with the furry stuff, but we all know what happened with that. Now people don't give a shit.
yeah, that's right.
In the last episode, I remember I was talking with the guest and I mentioned that at my school, there's a big controversy because they found out someone was a furry.
We must have an emergency meeting. Emergency.
I think it's hilarious. Like, I thought it was funny with the My Little Pony saga because I was one of those people who innocently watched My Little Pony as a kid, and I had the collection of little horses and shit like that. You know, I enjoyed that, but I never considered, not a day in my life, that there was pornography of it. Not one day. Care Bears, all of that. I'm just finding out there's peanuts porn. I'm like, wait a minute. You know, I know this is a thing for other people, but I was like, huh, that's curious. You know, we got Bluey porn. We got all this other stuff, you know, to Bluey's credit. You know, it's you know, Bluey's dad, you know, it's something about that Australian dog, man, you know, with his kids. It's just wholesome. You know, I just want to see somebody fucking, you know, it's, I don't know. It's great. I love Bluey's dad. He's great. He's a father. You know, it's like, hey, fathers, you know me. I like fathers. I like sons together. It's really great.
I think it's probably because, Bluey, I mean, I've never seen it, but I get the impression that people think it's like a particularly good cartoon, you know, as far as cartoons for kids go. And I think it was the same thing with My Little Pony Friendship is Magic, is that people thought it was particularly good for a cartoon for very young people. So I think that's a big reason why there was so much porn of it.
It's so funny because I'm like, you know, when My Little Pony first got on my radar, I was like, My Little Pony, you mean the... You know, the TV show, like with the little ponies, like they're like, yeah, that's part of it. I'm like, you know, Rule 34 has really held up to its name.
Yep, for sure.
Like, if there's anything you enjoy in this world, yeah, there's part of it for sure. You know, I was pretty curious about My Little Pony. I see the bronies were out here and they're like, hey, you know, I love My Little Pony, man. Fuck yeah. I was like, hey, brother. Do your thing, brother. I enjoy horse crock every now and then. Yeah, you know, what's wrong with it? Nothing.
But it kind of goes to show that, like, when people say, like I'm sure you've seen people do this before, they're just kind of like, oh, well, I mean, you know, I really like Gargura, or I really like Lollies, or I really like Shota, but I only like the safe for work cute aspect. And I'm just like, Sure, I know that you're that there is no way that you're just into the just into that.
Sure, Jan.
Like, there's definitely the NSFW stuff is absolutely prominent. I mean, and that's why, you know, like you said, anything that gets popular is going to inevitably have that, and there's going to be a lot of fans of it. Mm. It's just some people are more quiet about it than others. Mm. Like you said, with the Shota stuff, I think there are actually a lot of Shota fans, like Shotokan and stuff, but I think that they're a bit more of like a silent majority kind of thing.
I think so.
Because there's definitely a lot of female Shotokan fans. There's a ton of them.
Oh, absolutely.
They're out there.
Black Butler, that's another fandom I was really deep into when it first came out. Black Butler was that epicenter of like female Shotokans coming out of the woodwork to be like, oh my god, Ciel, like they love Sebastiel. Like, this was a pairing I really liked. Yeah, I drew that a lot. Now that I'm thinking about it deeply, like when it was first out, I was reading the comic and I was like, wow, a vampire butler and a kid. Yes. Yes. This will do.
Yeah.
And it was like, I was a deep hardcore fan, but seeing all the female Shotokans come out and be like, Ciel is so cute in his little outfit and hat. Look at his little eye patch. Like, they really did love Ciel. And they still do, you know? And there's people who come in and they're like, oh my God, he's a minor. He's a minor. And people are just like, shut up, bitch. We are enjoying this moment. If you want to have a problem, take it up with the creator who made this. Thank you.
That's right.
They never bring it up to her. They never do, but they got it all the time in the world to make it a problem for you to enjoy it. Because you enjoy it. It's so ridiculous.
Like, imagine if a Western cartoon, you know, did like a straight Shota pairing, like an actual, like, legitimate, like it actually like was confirmed to be canon and all that other stuff.
Twilight Zone,
like that,
basically.
Yeah, it'd be Twilight Zone, but it's like, if that did happen, or, well, actually, even if an anime did it that got mega, mega popular, I mean, like, super popular, and it had that kind of pairing, usually whenever that happens, you usually get, like, a seismic kind of shift that occurs,
mm-hmm.
where suddenly everybody kind of goes, like, well, I mean, I mean, yeah, there is that pairing between that, you know, little boy and that One-san girl. But I mean, the anime is great, though. And I mean, it's just like they kind of give it a pass bit because they're just like, yeah, but it's so fucking good, though, that, you know what, that's fine.
I mean, technically, there were a few titles like that, but it was super circumstantial. But I think, like, I honestly believe, like, Evangelion, for the time it aired, this thing between Shinji and Misato and Asuka was something, you know. They really were tapping into, like, you know, this was before this whole mommy fetish thing that was going on with Shinji between him and Misato, because she's a grown woman, and then there's Asuka, and everybody knows the infamous come in the hand scene, you know.
Yeah,
back then. Them airing that was wild, actually. People were like, whoa, wait a minute. And you know what's crazy? I watched this and, like, my parents were literally next to me and I was like, I can't explain this. It's like, oh, they were like, what's going on here? And, you know, I was at the time, we didn't think Anno was crazy enough to do this. You know, he was going through a lot at this time. You know, he's getting death threats and shit. It was insane. But this whole scene with Shinji just, like, jerking off at the corner of the bedside of Asuka laying unconscious was, I mean, you could say that was something, you know, it was something, you know. Shinji had, like, some kind of, it was weird, but he didn't have any relationships, but it was moving into that boundary of them trying to, like, establish something between this boy and this mother figure that he has in his life. The absence of a father, and then this girl that he really does find attractive. And it's like, they were trying to do something. That's why they gave us fan service a lot to kind of play up on that. But as far as, like, a legitimate title that was, like, with a Shota in it, the only thing that comes to my head is Boku no Pico. That's it. that reached astronomical levels, like for a Shota title. Like people who weren't even into Shota were watching that.
Yep. People said like, "Oh, Shota's bad," and they're gonna go watch Pokemon Pico anyways because it's part of a dare.
People were as soon as they saw it, they were like, "Oh man, what is this?" And it's back then when we got great titles like Sensitive Pornograph. Man, what a time to have been alive. You know, uncensored, unfiltered. It was cream of the crop. You know, they don't throw titles like this out anymore. Those things, when they dropped Boku no Pico, stuff like that, there was so many people who weren't even loli shows who watched that and were like, whoa, you know, maybe I could enjoy this. You know, there was plenty of people who were so open to watching this at this time, and not a single argument was made. Nobody cared that, you know, Pico like cross-dressing. Nobody cared about any of that stuff. People watched it and everybody glossed over it like it was an issue. We move a decade from then, people are now talking about it and they're like, well, how could this have possibly been made, and who could have been watching this? This is disgusting. And it's like, wait a minute, nobody was saying that when it came out.
Yeah, it was a meme basically when it came out. It was like a challenge. As if it was like fucking Goatsy or Tub Girl or something. Or Two Girls, One Cup.
And bravo. Bravo to that, because they put their foot in that. And that was really great. It was great. I thought to myself, man, if one day I could have like a project like this where it's just, you know, because we've never seen anything like that ever again. We had a couple of things that came out since then, but nothing as graphic as Boku no Pico. And that always bothered me. So I told myself, you know what? I'm going to be able to eventually one day make my own things. Maybe someday I could do my own animation. It's ambitious, but I've got time.
That's awesome. That's awesome if you did that. And if it got really popular.
Yeah, I think if this is back to what you were saying about how like people supporting the communities that they're in, you know, imagine your favorite creator getting so much support that they can make their own stories, like shows and stuff like that. Like people want this stuff and then they'll look to the sky and be like, well, who's gonna make it for us? And it's like, well, I mean, you've got people right here who could do it for you. All they need is funding, all they need is support and a safe place to do it. You know, this is the time. I think now that it's easier than ever to set up your own website, do stuff like that, it's easier than ever to get support. But it's like we have to start learning not to rely on these sites that don't have our best interests, and then they kick us off when things are convenient for them or they need your traffic, and then once they're done getting that, they toss you away. And it's, I've seen this happen a billion times, and it's like these people who could have been great, they don't. And then we don't get these projects that we're looking for.
Yeah. So just really honestly consider supporting people, because don't take them for granted, really.
Really? I've seen people die too, like before they could even get anything done. So this is, if people want the stuff they're looking for, and, you know, even like ToddCon, all this other stuff, because this is the more taboo things that they're really not letting people draw. They're not letting them. And there's no outlet. And I found a way to make that outlet, because these are all things I definitely want to explore, those themes, those topics. I don't care how taboo they are. I'm going to explore them, you know, without repercussion. That's, you know, and I feel like doing this will probably give people more, I don't know, if they see somebody has done it, they feel like maybe they can do it too.
Yeah, right. It's like an encouragement. It's like a mutual encouragement kind of thing. Or it's like a passive encouragement.
Right.
Yep.
You know, and I'm happy to help people. People ask me all the time, they're like, you know, how did you make your website? And, you know, I try to explain it to them, but it's like, and I'm not even saying this to be an asshole. It's just like, you know, it's like you're trying to explain something to like an ant. You know, the ant doesn't get it. You know, it's been living its ant life, and it's like you've been out here building spaceships and shit, and you're trying to explain to people how spaceships are built, and they're not interested in spaceships. That's how artists act towards me when I start mentioning my websites. They're like, oh yeah, I don't know how to make one. And I'm like, yeah, I didn't either, but like, look where I'm at now. It's if you, two things, you don't want to do it, pay somebody to do it for you, but they don't want to do that either. So it's like, I don't know. I try, but
you have to put the effort into learning it.
You do. Everybody acts like I came out of nowhere with this information. Like I literally had to sit my ass down and study this for hours on end. Like I had to refresh on JavaScript because it changed iterations like the last 10 years. I had to sit here and learn HTML5. Like I'm that dedicated to solving my problem because I left it up to a company to solve it, and look what that did for me. So I want to know what they know, disseminate that information, and then break it down and re-engineer it for myself. That's essentially what I did.
Yeah, it's all about, you know, taking our destiny in our own hands and not relying on people who are not so friendly towards us. It's what the furries did, that's what the bronies did, and that's what we need to do as well.
That's what we need to do.
Yep.
And I wish good luck to everybody, because the situation that's occurring for us is very weird, and people are not being able to do what they love, and that sucks. And I want to help any way that I can. Any information I have, you know, that I've come across, like I've given people the exact courses and stuff that I took to like learn about JavaScript and things like that. And I have YouTube playlists of like coding tips that I got, and there's services that I've used people can use, you know, if they want to know how to find a mailing service, or, you know, because I don't do my mailing service by myself. It's to a company and they take care of that. So like anybody needs to log into my site, they get something like a magic link, and this essentially makes my site passwordless. That way nobody's bugging me for passwords. I don't have them. You know, so they can log in easily by putting in their email right into my site and log in that way. And they get a link into their mailbox and they click that, and then they can be logged in until they log out.
That's smart. Yeah, you don't have to deal with, oh, I forgot my password.
Yep. Very convenient way to use the site. That's smart.
So if someone goes on your page, what should they expect to see?
So when you get on the main page, you'll have the header links at the top. You can read the about me, like to get a sense of who I am. My links to my socials are up at the top. So if people are just, they don't want to pay anything yet, they just want to see what art I do, they can go at Barrage, or they can go to my B-Sky, which I post my adult stuff at, and see for themselves like what kind of work that I've done. Then, you know, you can click on the sign up button. It brings you straight to the portal, and you got two choices. You can pick the $5 tier or the $10 tier. Now, the caveat with the $10 tier is that you can sign up for it, but it brings you to a space where it has all my adult content, no Shota at all. So there's a special tier that I give for people who are interested in Shota, and I call it the invite tier. And that is where people have to come contact me, because this is a way for me to filter out who's anti or who isn't. You know, people were being nosy for no reason, just to, I don't know what they would want to do, but it's a filtering process to make sure that the people who want to look at that content do see it. So, you know, this is just a way to like mitigate any kind of nonsense like, oh, I didn't want to see this content, or this isn't something I want, you know. So there's tiers for everybody, and it's all like segmented off.
Yeah, so you have to go out of your way to see it.
Yes. So if you contact me, I'm usually pretty quick about it. I change the tier, they get to see that content only. So it's everybody's in their respective places. Nobody sees anything that they don't want to see. And that's really what I wanted for people who wanted privacy as well. Like, they don't want to be filtered in with other people who may not like that. So if they see their comment and they get weirded out by it, you know, nothing like that happens.
That's good. So can you tell us like the URLs, like where people can find your stuff, like your Barrage username, your website?
My Barrage is at Themeuniverse. I guess the link would be https://@themuniverse. And my website is themuniverse.net. Pretty simple.
Nice. Yeah, so if you want to check out his stuff, check it out there. He's got daddies, he's got adult men, he's got shotas, whatever you need.
Got everything you need. Come on down.
Unlimited supply.
We got shotas to the left and to the right. Come on down. We got everything for everyone.
Awesome. So that was a great episode with you, Universe, and we learned a lot. Had fun talking about shotas and daddies and all of that.
I'm so glad you guys invited me because, I feel like the community is accepting me, and this is a great sign for me that I'm doing the right things. So I appreciate that you guys brought me on. I appreciate it.
Of course.
Yeah, no, it was an awesome discussion, and we wish you all the best for getting your website built up more and more. Like how many subscribers would you say you have?
I think I just cracked 65 for the
pretty good
invite. Pretty good. I believe I'm trying to keep track of this stuff. Like it's a little difficult because people sometimes they come in and out, so the number changes every now and then. But overall, I think almost 70 people have signed up.
Nice.
See that's pretty awesome.
Let's keep it going.
I mean, let's get it cracked past 100. Let's get it further than that. And
praying for rain.
I mean that's a pretty big deal for your own independent website. So that's what we want to see. We want to see more Lolly Show creators be able to have their own site, have people join it and enjoy the content, and be essentially you're basically just free to do whatever you want at that point. Yeah. So it's great.
Feels so good. I encourage everybody who's listening, if you want to be a site owner, you want site ownership, you feel like you can handle that, you won't want to go back.
That's right.
Oh yeah, I'm definitely true on that, for sure.